Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have everyone back, as it seems like spring is breaking out all over the place. Got to drive around on the dry prairie today here in the Denver metropolitan area. And even though everything is brown and dry, you can feel it in the air. Any minute, those greens and yellows and reds are going to burst forth and bloom in the spring. It's going to be fantastic. If we can get there without burning to the ground first, that's all we hope for. Yes. So, anyway, I need to get to this story of Donald Trump accusing Barack, but generally correct, I'm sure. I'm sure Mr. Trump wouldn't make such an accusation without solid evidence. And in fact, it hasn't been denied that there was surveillance occurring. But why did the FBI tap Donald Trump? And this brings us back, of course, which if the FBI tapped Donald Trump or the NSA or the CIA or whoever, it all goes back to Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and the girl junta that was running the country and probably still is to a great degree. It all goes back to Barry Ho's office and his mother-in-law and his ugly wife and his even uglier Valerie's GIC. She was the girl in charge. It all goes back to them. But if it did happen, why did it happen? How did it happen? And this actually turns my memory back to the end of the 2016 campaign, inexplicably, Ho investigation. Do you remember that? I remember that. It shook the foundations of the election. And a week later, he said, well, there's nothing really there. We're probably going to close it again, and I'm really sorry I said anything. So who yanked James Comey's chain? Who yanked the chain to reopen the Hillary email investigation? Who yanked his chain to close it a week later before the election and try to make all nice like nothing ever happened? Who did that? Why did that happen? Didn't it seem bizarre to you? It seemed really bizarre to me. And then we have Michael Flynn. Let's not forget Michael Flynn guy over something like that. Especially when it did Trump's enemies so much good. Things have seemed very confusing until right now. Things are starting to crystallize in my mind right now as to what's actually going on. And let me clue you into it. Michael Flynn did not resign because of anything to do with anything having anything at all to do with conversations he had with Russia. That's not why he resigned. Not even close. James Comey did not reopen suddenly an email investigation because he thought there was anything there as far as Hillary Clinton's email or to try to help Donald Trump or to try to hurt, I almost said Bill Clinton. Didn't do it against the Clintons. But why did Comey and Flynn do what they've done, and how does this all tie in to what James Comey did today? James Comey is demanding that the FBI insist there's no way they tapped any phones at any tower anywhere in New York ever. No towers. Not the Trump Tower or any other tower, if there are any towers. And I don't want anyone in the FBI to say there are any towers without talking to me first, said James Comey. It's all very strange. Michael Flynn resigned. Not because he misled the vice president or did anything with the Russians or anything like that. He resigned to keep a deeply embarrassing personal sex scandal out of the news. That's my prediction. James Comey, who yanked his chain one way and then who yanked his chain the other way? It's whoever holds the information on the extremely embarrassing sex scandal hanging over the head of James Comey right now as we speak. That Barack Obama did, and Valerie Jarrett, and the girl Hunta that's running the deep state. Yes, that was happening no matter what. But the reason people have reacted the way they are, specifically James Comey, is to keep a deeply embarrassing personal sex scandal out of the news. These various dirtbags, Michael Flynn, James Comey, people in their immediate orbit, when all that dirt comes out, it'll be so embarrassing that even Bill Clinton might blush. Maybe. It's quite possible. It could even make Bubba Bill Jeff blush. That's right. So that's my analysis of all the strange goings-on. Oh, no, the wiretapping, that was strictly so Obama could spy on the Trump campaign. That's exact. And the reason the Russian connection has been made from the beginning is because Barry Ho knew that eventually this was going to come out, in my humble opinion. Now, we'll see what gets reported, and we'll see what ends up being perceived as the truth is what's actually happening. And I'm glad that I'm here to help you understand it better. Now, we have to go to the news, of course. We have a big update on the Day Without Dykes. The Day Without Dykes, what is the date today? It's not today, is it? No, today's Sunday. Oh, the Dykes are staying home on Sunday no matter what, because they sure aren't going to church. No, the Dykes are spending Sunday morning hungover in bed. But the Day Without Dykes is coming up. It's March 8th, and it's been called the Day Without Women. And it's a general strike that's been called by the clipped-haired, clenched-jawed types, as Michael Savage would say. I have to steal that line because there just is not a better line to describe that type of person. The clipped-haired, clenched-jawed. You can't improve on that. So you just have to give credit where credit is due. Yes, I stole it from Michael Savage. So sue me, Dr. Savage. I could use the publicity. Now, I think if you give him attribution, he doesn't get upset. He likes that a lot. He likes to be called doctor, too. Did you know he had a PhD? From a top university, by the way. Berkeley. But we need to get to this update on the Day Without Dykes. I apologize for getting sidetracked in my blatant theft of witticisms from other people in the broadcast industry. We found a positive side effect of the upcoming Day Without Dykes. Number one, a lot of dykes are going to stay home and they're not going to annoy their coworkers. That's one. But that's a given. But now there's another sociologically more important side effect that's coming up, and we go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, to report on that from the Associated Press. The Day Without Dykes will mean a day without classes for students in one North Carolina school system. That's right. The Chapel Hill Carborough City School announced last week that they're declaring March 8th as an optional teacher work day with no classes for students. It's an optional work day. If the teachers want to go to work that day, they can. And there's no classes, but the teachers could go and do all the work that they do besides teaching the kids in class. Okay. Now, it's an optional work day. So what do you think? When given the option not to work and still get paid, what do you think the teachers at the Chapel Hill Carborough City School system will do? Will they go march with the dykes? No? Or will they go to school and do the, you know, all that significant preparatory work that it takes in order to regurgitate the same curriculum year after year after year after year? You know, all that work. Or will they just stay home and watch Oprah and eat, what are those? Boy, that would have been a great line if I could. Cheetos? No, I had a better one. The little pink birds for Easter. Peeps. Will they just lay up on the couch watching Oprah eating Peeps? Is Oprah even on TV anymore? No, that's it. They'll be laying up on the couch watching OWN, O-W-N, the Oprah Winfrey Network, and eating Peeps and Cheetos. That's... I vote for number three. That's what they will be doing if giving the. That's what they will be doing if given the option to work or lay up on the sofa eating Cheetos. So there you have it, our Day Without Dykes update. Yes, we will be on March 8th. Let's see, March 8th is upcoming. Let's see, today being the 6th, is that right? 5th? Whatever, it's coming up soon. You'll barely notice it. Believe me, folks, we're going to be okay. I want everyone to remain calm. Okay, when the clipped-haired, clenched-jawed brigades are marching through the streets of the major metropolitan areas in every city in America, and then the people who actually work and actually produce are at work, we won't even notice, except things will just be a little bit nicer. The sun will be a little bit brighter. There will be a little less tension in the office, you know, as America embarks on hopefully what will become the first annual Day Without Dykes. All right. Now, I have to go. Over and report on this story from the Daily Mail in London is reporting on a story from Japan, believe it or not. And this is just a tragedy of epic proportion. And in my mind, this epitomizes the state of Japanese culture for the last 25 years or so. The Daily Mail reports that a lonely Japanese man's body was discovered recently under approximately 6 tons of pornographic magazines. Yes, the man died when a huge pile of magazines in his home fell on top of him. The body was discovered about 6 months later when the landlord entered the apartment to find out why the rent had not been paid. Unfortunately, and embarrassingly for this particular individual, his death was revealed to his family by a member of the cleaning team who said his company had been hired to remove the magazines discreetly. You see, the landlord didn't realize anyone had died. He walked into his apartment and found that it was piled to the ceiling with pornographic magazines. He wanted them removed discreetly in order to avoid any embarrassment or shame to the man who had been renting his apartment. And lo and behold, as they're trying to save face, well, they find his dead body underneath approximately 6 metric tons of pornographic magazines. So there was no shame, no face was saved, and the man's body was discreetly removed, I'm sure. But just a sad story and emblematic of the state of Japanese civilization, unfortunately. And we're sad to see it occurred, but we can't really say we have any pity on the guy, right? No pity, no. It's a shameful and disgusting way to die. And, well, it proves the old axiom that if nothing else, you can always serve as a bad example in life and in death. Now, speaking of the Oprah Winfrey Network, let's go to the Celebrity Caesars file where we pull out the big report from the past week. Oprah did an interview with Bloomberg, and, she revealed that she might run for president. Let's just get right to it. In the past, Oprah had presumed that she was not intelligent enough, she didn't have enough experience, she didn't have the skill set there. She was in no way qualified to be the president of the United States. That's what she assumed in the past. But then, she says, Trump won the November election. And suddenly, she didn't think she was unqualified anymore. Proving that the election of Donald Trump, if nothing else, is a harbinger of extremely stupid famous people now starting to think that they're not as stupid as they thought, when in fact they are just as stupid and unqualified as they thought they were. But Donald Trump did it. Maybe they can do it. And it's the age of the celebrity Caesars, and shall we ever recover? I can't stand this. that it? That hardly qualifies as a guitar solo. Okay, no, let it roll. Let's hear it. Well, I suppose we'll let that one slide. I mean, at least they made an effort. Yeah, they hired somebody to do a guitar solo. But anyways, we'll let that one slide. Man, was that the Men Without Hats? Psychedelic Furs? That was Tears for Fears. They're all in that same group, that same genre in my mind.
Same with, voice.
Yeah, they all have that same voice that was described to me by my sergeant. Let's see, this would have been circa 1987 on Camp Smedley D. Butler. When that voice was described to me by, at that time, he was a corporal. Yeah, he was a corporal at that time, and he had described that voice, and now it's forever etched in my mind. Whenever I hear The Cure or any of the subdivisions of The Cure, including, who was that, Psychedelic Furs? Tears for Fears, including all of them. They have that voice, yes. All right. Now, I have to get back to Oprah Winfrey because really quickly now, she says she may run for president. She thinks she is not, she no longer thinks she is stupid and unqualified, and that's a scary thing. Because at least there's one thing that keeps celebrities in check is the fact that they know they have no skills. They're relatively shallow. They have very little intelligence, but they're able to act like other people and say things that other people write very well. And they do that, and that keeps them occupied with whatever it is they're doing. Well, in fact, now that I think of it, that is probably more dangerous than whatever James Comey is doing. Oprah Winfrey has probably helped destroy more souls and more lives than James Comey, head of the FBI. And celebrities in the pop culture in general, if you take them all and put them all into a meat grinder together and grind them all out into an amalgamation of what they are and what they think and what they do and what they leave behind and what they do to society, the pop culture is generally more toxic to people and their lives and their souls and their marriages and their children than is anyone at the FBI or the CIA or the executive branch, possibly more than the legislative branch, maybe even more than the judicial branch, the pop culture branch, definitely more dangerous. Anyway, I had to get back because I wanted to do this quote from Oprah. She says, speaking about her relative unintelligence and general state of unqualifiedness. Oprah said, I remember when I started school. I remember when I started that girls' school in South Africa. I said to my beloved friend Maya Angelou, I said, Maya, Maya, Maya. I said it three times just like that. Maya, 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 I'm just so proud that I'm going to be able to create this school. This, Maya, 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 is going to be my greatest legacy. But then Maya said to me, Oprah, Oprah, you have no idea. You have no idea what your legacy will be. Because Oprah, 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 your legacy is every life you have touched. Give me a Newport. So that's Oprah. Maya Angelou, I could not resist. I can never hear enough of the mellifluous voice of Maya Angelou. Her poetic, all of that. So we'll just move on from there to Valerie Jarrett. Speaking of moving on, let's talk about moving in. Yes, Valerie Jarrett has moved into Barack Obama's house, and they're not even married. And she's not even the nanny and Let me scan the story here. As far as I can tell, Valerie Jarrett is not the cleaning lady either. She's not doing dishes. She's not washing windows. She's not folding the kids' clothes. What is Valerie Jarrett up to? Well, according to the Daily Mail in London, according to a close family friend, Valerie Jarrett has moved into Barack Obama's house to help Obama achieve his post-presidency goal, which is to oust Donald Trump from the presidency, either by forcing his resignation or through his impeachment. Yes, that's why Valerie has moved into Barry's house. Yes. Now, we know there's nothing romantic going on between Barry and Valerie Jarrett, since neither have expressed an interest in the opposite sex for at least 50 years. So that's not it. It's truly a Machiavellian arrangement so that they can conquer and destroy as much as they possibly can, including the presidency of one Donald Trump. Now, according to the Daily Mail article, Valerie has moved in with Michelle and Barry, longtime best friends. I don't know if they're talking about Michelle and Valerie or Valerie and Barry, because they're certainly not talking about Barry and Michelle. You take one look at them two, they hate each other. Can't stand each other. Absolutely loathe and detest each other. But they've made their bed and now they're going to, well, sleep in separate bedrooms, but you know what I mean. By the way, Valerie Jarrett lived in the White House. I didn't know that she actually lived there. Is that true? She lived there. And, well, that's news to me. Anyway, last week, according to the Daily Mail, now I'm not making this up, although the Daily Mail could be making it up, and I'm completely duped, although I find this believable. Last week, former Attorney General Eric Holder revealed that Obama is getting closer to making his public reappearance into politics. That's right. Barry's not going to go away, at least not for very long. He's kind of like a herpes breakout. Yes, it goes away, but it's not going to go away for very long. And that's, in fact, we could call him Barry Simplex One, right? Or Barry Ho Complex Two. He'll be back, yes. He is going to, according to close personal friends and associates, according to Eric Holder, he says he's coming. He's coming and he's ready to roll. He is ready to assume the role of leader of the opposition, according to Eric Holder, who should know because he probably is moving in as well. He's not going to be public about it, though. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing for a guy like Holder to admit he's got to move into Barry's basement. Valerie Jarrett, she can get away with such things because she's a girl and she can say, look, I'm just a best friends with Michelle. But Eric would have to admit that he's a complete failure, an utter failure, and that the rest of his entire life hinges on the approval of Barack Obama and his network of thieves and liars and murderers. And that's where Eric Holder finds himself. Isn't Eric Holder regurgitating curricula at some university now? Isn't that what he's doing? Get the crack research staff on that and find out, what is Eric Holder doing these days? He's giving an interview about Barry ready to roll? Okay. I thought he was, well, we'll see here. Valerie Jarrett, apparently, according to friends, has convinced Barry that he has no choice but to assume the role of leader of the opposition if he wants to save his legacy. It's been very comical over the past couple of days to listen to CNN and other liberal and conservative, frankly, outlets discussing the fact that Donald Trump has brought up the wiretapping because, oh, Donald Trump is worried because the Russian investigation is finally going to reveal something very terrible. And it's just laughable. I mean, even I forget who the hack was on Fox News the other night who said with a straight face, well, Donald probably knew that this was going to come out, so he's trying to get in front of it. Had anybody thought that maybe Barry knew that this was going to come out? Huh? Anybody thought about that? Anyway, but Barack Obama and his twisted, sick, Caligula-like circle, including Eric Holder and Valerie Jarrett, they've got a lot of other things to worry about, let alone the legacy and how Donald Trump makes Barack Obama look like a child. And all the pictures they've been showing over the past few days of Barry shaking hands with Donald Trump. Donald Trump looks like his employer. And he's saying to him, look, kid, I'm going to try to keep you on, but man, you're making it really difficult. If you screw up one more project, we're going to have to let you go. I know you've got the kids. Believe me, I told you we're trying to find something for you. But son, anyway, that's what the pictures look like to me. That's all. We're going to go to the When in Rome, Do as Caligula file. Because Joe Biden is a part of this sick, twisted network of thieves, liars, and murderers that surround Barack Obama and his Barry Ho and his M.O. Yeah, Michelle Obama. But Caligula is alive and well, at least the spirit of Caligula, in the Biden clan. Listen to this. Okay, I got to do this with a straight face. Joe Biden's youngest son is in a romantic relationship with his dead brother's wife. Yes, the widow of Bo Biden. And that doesn't seem that shocking, right? I mean, you and your brother are close. Your brother dies. It's even biblical, right? If your brother's wife dies, you should take care of your brother's wife. So on its face, it's not that shocking until you start getting into the details of the article. And you find out that Hunter Biden, who has announced he's in a romantic relationship with his dead brother's wife, happens to still be married to Kathleen. Did you catch that? Is it too complicated and sick and twisted? Hunter, the younger brother who's still alive, he's still married to his wife. But he's romantic. He's announcing that he has a romantic relationship with his dead brother's wife. Joe Biden and his lovely wife, Jill, have given their complete blessing to the relationship between Caligula and Bo Biden's wife, widow, as a matter of fact. So Joe Biden gives his blessing to his son, leaving his living wife to marry the wife of his dead brother. Joe Biden might be interested in somebody here, and that's...
No, I mean, that wife.
Oh, maybe Joe is interested in Hunter's wife, Kathleen. That could be. That could explain it, because otherwise this seems really, really sick, twisted, and weird. Now, the one thing normal in this story is that Kathleen Biden, she's the wife of the living Biden Hunter, she has filed for divorce. That's the one normal thing in the story. I had not anticipated the possibility that Joe Biden could be making a move for the daughter-in-law, Kathleen. I had not anticipated that, but that is a possibility. When in the court, do as Caligula file.
Everybody was...
It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the fastest streaming show in podcast land, depending on your internet service providers' download speeds. Welcome back, everybody. I have to move now into the pop culture news, because there is big news from the culture file. As a matter of fact, Heat Street is reporting that ABC has suffered an incredibly embarrassing collapse in ratings and one of the biggest flops in the history of miniseries. Yes. Now, despite the fact that this miniseries was produced by somebody extremely famous, I said extremely famous, yes. In fact, when I get to his name, it's someone that you're going to recognize, I think. I think you might recognize, actually, I don't know who it was, and I don't care. But the Heat Street says it was someone famous, and the miniseries that was to be aired, that has been being aired on ABC, received saturation ad coverage during the Oscars. Did you see this? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Did you see all the ads for When We Rise on the Oscars? Did you see them all? It was saturation coverage, according to HeatStreet.com. I and my extremely attractive audio engineer, we missed all of them because we did not saturate our minds with the Oscars, nor did we even allow it into our house for even 1 minute. When We Rise, by the way, is an ABC production. It's an 8-hour drama miniseries chronicling the LGBT movement of the 20th century, that's right. And ABC had expected it to be a big winner. They did saturation coverage during the Oscars. Well, part one aired last Monday, and it flopped. So what they did was they rescheduled a popular show that I've never heard of right in front of it just to try to boost the ratings. But despite that effort, on day two, episode number two, well, they had a million fewer viewers than episode one. And did I mention that episode one flopped? Now, the miniseries seemed like a textbook guaranteed winner. It was When We Rise, an 8-hour drama miniseries chronicling the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered revolution of the 20th century. Yes. You would think that all of America would fall all over themselves to tune in. After all, it was created by an award-winning gay activist, Dustin Lance Black. Which we all, right? Dustin Lance Black? I mean, he sounds like a faggot. I mean, that sounds like a queer. Hi, I'm Dustin Lance Black. I have some extra names because I'm special. Dustin Lance Black. I include my middle name because I'm famous. It was produced by gay activist Dustin Lance Black. It aired on four nights this past week, I guess. And, oh, look, it starred Whoopi Goldberg, among others, who I never heard of. Guy Pearce, never heard. Mary Louise Parker, never heard of these people. But, hey, Whoopi Goldberg, that's money in the bank. You're telling me that this flopped? Well, it did flop, and there's... Well, we'll go. Some of the theories they say in the Heat Street article, perhaps viewers don't respond well to virtue scheduling. Virtue scheduling, they said. Or maybe it was because the New York Times didn't give the show a rave review. The New York Times. If you're thinking about watching ABC, and then you find yourself checking the New York Times, you're probably over 85 years old. And you're not going to be watching a chronicle of the homosexual revolution of the 20th century. Yes. Yes, the New York Times said it plays like a high-minded, dutiful, educational video. Not exactly a rave review. Then Heat Street says the marketing was disastrous. Disastrous? They just said it had saturation ad coverage during the Oscars. I don't know what's disastrous about that. Let's see. Let's see. Now, so it flopped is basically what they say. And they note that there have been some other notable flops in the homo genre. USA TV Network's Gay Murder Mystery was canceled. CBS's first network show to feature a transgendered freak of nature as a lead role. That show was dropped after just 2 weeks. I'm not giving the names of these shows because I don't want to be part of the disastrous marketing that's associated with their failure. Why is it, the Heat Street asks, are all these homo-friendly LGBTQSAFLMFD? Why are they all failing? It's a mystery. It's obviously disastrous marketing, poor timing, and the lack of interest in virtue. That's what Heat Street thinks. I think it's because homosexuals still offend the sensibilities of middle America. Yeah, homos make us sick. And that's something you haven't calculated and plugged into your marketing. I know. When the pollster calls on the phone, everybody wants to appear to be tolerant and virtuous and say that we just love and respect and gay. And my father was gay. My grandfather was gay. We love gay people. I want gay people to move into my house. That's how people answer the polls. Because they've been cowed into believing that they have to be so tolerant as to practically be in love with every pile of homos that they stumble across. But in reality, homos make us sick, and we don't want to watch them on TV, and we're sick of hearing about you. We're sick of you flagrantly flaunting your perversion right in our face, and when we have the opportunity to vote with our checkbook and with our feet, we do so. And what you do flops pathetically in a big way. And it leaves you scratching your head, wondering, what is it about middle America that they just don't appreciate? I mean, there was a lesbian, gay, transgendered, and queer revolution in the 20th century. Doesn't everybody want to hear about it? It was so fantastic and fabulous. We don't want to hear about it. We're sick of it. Shut up and get out of here with that. All right. Let's go now to reason number 1,090, or is it 1,091? Get the crack staff researching that and let me know. I believe it's 1,091. Somebody's going to be fired for that. Get Obama in here. I'll bet this is his mistake again. Come here, Barry. I told you we've been trying to find something for you. I know you got the kids. I know you have no other means to really support yourself and take care of yourself, but this is it. You're fired. Reason number 1,091 to get or keep your children out of the government school system. This comes to us from the Star Tribune in Minnesota. It's from the University of Minnesota. Police are investigating the reported rape of a University of Minnesota student by a classmate. I know. Doug, why are you reporting on this story? This happens all the time. Rape is rampant throughout the university system. Sexual harassment, sexual intimidation, rape, all of that. The sad case here in the University of Minnesota, the victim was pledging Alpha Epsilon Pi, which is a fraternity. That's F-R-A-T, fraternity. Go back to your Latin. Think of what a fraternity. The victim told police that he was raped by one of the fraternity members on January 29th. The victim says that what started out as a consensual encounter between the two men... All right, that's it. I can't do anymore. Reason number 1,091 to keep or get your children out of any government-subsidized, authorized, credentialed school system, including the university system. Don't send your son off to university because he may be raped by another man in the dorm. And what's worse, it may start out as a consensual. Just stop. I just don't. All right. Let's get to some good news, ladies and gentlemen, from the War File. A drive-in theater in Alabama says they will not show Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Why? because of the sex perverts and the fact that they had to put in a scene with homosexuality. That's why. I said Disney's Beauty and the Beast, the new version, is going to have a full-on queer faggot, just unbelievable. Well, the Henniger Drive-In Theater in DeKalb County, Alabama, said no. We are not going to show it on our screen. And here's what, well, before I get to what they posted on Facebook, I just want you people to know that I had to go and check the internet today before I reported on this story to see if this the poor owners of this theater had quite possibly succumbed to the harassment of the sex perverts who support such deviance and perversion as what's about to be released in this Beauty and the Beast. You know, the homo mafia, the queer mafia. You say one thing that implies that maybe homos make you sick, and the queer mafia will come and burn your house down or take your cake business away or threaten you. Well, so far, the owners of the Henniger Drive-In in DeKalb County, Alabama, have not succumbed to the harassment of the queer mafia. They say they will not air Disney's perverted, homosexual, gross, sick, disgusting, vile, vomitous version of Beauty and the Beast. And here's what the owner posted on Facebook. They posted, if I can't sit through a movie with God or Jesus sitting next to me, then we have no business showing it. And you're one with the cause and a reason to be. You were a fighter for peace on this earth. And you were never afraid. You put your life on the line. And you were always alone. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you very much for that. He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. And we have to go back. Got distracted there. Speaking of being distracted, here at the McBurney compound, you may know that we have reverted to an agrarian civilization, especially where it concerns Arapahoe County, Colorado, and the tax assessor's office. We are a strictly agrarian economy here, and this week, almost by accident, we doubled our chicken population. Almost, we went from 12 chickens to now 18 plus 12, it's 30 chickens. Because when you go and you look at the chicks there in the various places where you can buy such things, the chicks they're cute. And they're different colors and shapes, and their face looks different. So we now, does this mean there's going to be an expansion to the walk-in chicken coop? You think that's going to require physical labor on my part? That's what I'm really concerned about. Anyway, I picked out a star-spangled, I can't remember the name of it now, but anyway, it was a brightly colored bird, and that's going to be my particular chicken. And by the way, we were assured on the 18 chickens that we purchased this week that they're all pullets, meaning they're females and they're going to lay eggs, to which we said, ha, yeah, right. Anyway, we'll just see about that. We'll give you a report on the sex, what did they call it? The sexing of the chickens. They say, whoa, they're pre-sexed. We sexed them. It's like, how'd you do that? Yeah, they had a disclaimer on up the top. We do not guarantee the sex of any chickens. But when you talk to the salesman, oh, yeah, we sexed them. Yeah, they're all pullets. They'll all, yeah, they'll be great. Yeah. Oh, anyway, we'll keep you advised. Now, of the 12 chickens previously purchased, 6 were roosters, which seems about right. Yeah. So we'll tell you about the other 18. I'm anticipating 8 or 9. No, I'm anticipating 9 or 10 roosters. That's what I'm anticipating. More than half, but we'll see. But a good time. That's one of the reasons we feel spring around here. You can feel it in the air now with the chicks who have moved back into my bathtub. Got the bathtub, got the heat lamp, got the chicks in there, and well, yeah, we did acquire a rabbit, but that has nothing to do with
That looks like an Easter thing.
Oh, it's an Easter thing. We got the rabbit, we got the chicks, we got eggs being laid. Yes, you can feel it in the air. So that makes it, I don't want to do this story now, and I don't want to do this one. I don't want to do this one. How about this? Let's start with this. Over in Spain, this is from the Decline and Fall file here at the Weekly Worldview. Spain has appointed a sex czar to help boost the country's catastrophically low birth rate. That's a quote from the Spanish Department of Interior, the equivalent thereof. Catastrophically low birth rate. That's right. They've appointed a czar. A czar. Okay. The move comes, according to the Mirror over in London, after the country reported a higher number of deaths than births for the first time in 2015. That means more Spaniards are dropping dead than are being born, if you can believe that. Well, we've been chronicling this for, I don't know, 10 years? How far does this show go back? 1999 was the first time we did it. That would be, that's 18 years. Anyway, we've been documenting this for years. Spain's birth rate has fallen almost 20% since Barack Obama ran for president. How about that? Between 1977 and 2015, a mere 40 years, the number of childless people in Spain has tripled. Tripled. The prime minister is about to draft a document for a national strategy to confront demographic imbalances. Hey, get Barry back in here. Come in here, Barry. All right. We couldn't find anything for you here, all right? But we understand that in Spain, they are looking for bureaucrats to help draft a national strategy of domestic imbalances. That sounds vague enough, Barry, that you could probably qualify. So we're going to send your name over there, okay? Get out of here! All right. So Barry is going to go over and apply to write the strategy of demographic imbalances. Spain's education ministry says the declining birth rate aggravates other economic imbalances and generates important impacts in the welfare state. So this is what I'm getting at with this story. The governing officials and the people of Spain are not concerned about their birth rate for the love of their children, but for the preservation of their own comfort. They could care less about children. What they're worried about is who's going to pay their pension, and they're starting to freak out about it. This is one of the proofs of God's wisdom. Okay, this. Because even in the selfish pursuit of these perverted old geezers, in the selfish pursuit of their own comfort and their own pension, these fallen bunch of geezers, self-absorbed geezers, will produce eternal beings, profitable and bringing glory and pleasure to the Creator of the universe forever. So Spain is only worried about the birth rate because they can't pay their pension. but God, the way he designed things, that even in our corruption, we will produce glory to him. And this is why God is a lot smarter than we are, and why you should look to him for wisdom. And don't look to whoever writes the Spanish strategy of demographic imbalances. You certainly don't want to look to him, especially if Barry gets the job. All right, now that I've at least gotten into more, I want to talk about this personhood. I want to rebuke publicly everyone who has ever endorsed a 20-week abortion ban. You're all a bunch of fools, you're counterproductive, and you should probably be either deported or arrested, or at least prevented from ever assuming the leadership of any pro-life organization anywhere ever. Over in Iowa this past week, a Senate committee approved a bill that would ban most abortions in Iowa after 20 weeks pregnancy. Another bill that would have banned all abortions in Iowa failed. So here's what the pro-life industry has done. They have trained our politicians that they can pass a bill that would keep legal 95% of all surgical abortions, and they can call that a pro-life victory. Do you people know how many abortions occur after 20 weeks? Well, go on Google and look. It's almost none. So the pro-life Republicans and the pro-life Democrats in Iowa, the Republicans talked the Democrats into backing this 20-week abortion ban after they made enough exceptions so that you could kill just about any baby you want to. Yes. The Republicans said that, okay, we'll let you kill the baby if the mother's life is in danger or if the fetus has a fatal abnormality. So if the baby is sick or if the mother claims she's going to die, even if it's of stress and anxiety, well, you can kill the baby. So, oh, I don't even want to get in. Okay, you want to hear about this? The Democrats hauled out this woman who found out in her 21st week of pregnancy that her child did not have lungs and was not going to live. And so the Republicans sat through her testimony and where she testified to the fact that she found out her child was sick and was probably going to die. So she killed the child. And then what did the Republicans and the Democrats do? They wept. And they called her brave and strong and what a wonderful human being. You find out your child is sick and maybe your child is going to die and then you kill the child. What a wonderful mother. So it made all the Republicans rewrite the bill so that you could kill any baby in Iowa you want. But pro-life organizations that back the bill can still send out fundraisers claiming that we've won. In the meantime, the personhood bill, which would have effectively banned all abortions, died in committee. That bill declared that life is protected from the moment of conception. That bill died in committee, meaning that the pro-life perspective was defeated utterly and in complete humiliation. The pro-life side should leave the field in disgrace, having been utterly defeated, but instead, next week, they'll be sending out fundraising letters talking about how they've banned almost every abortion after 20 weeks, almost all of them. Yes, the pro-life industry has secured their victory, endorsing, 95 to 99% of all child killing in Iowa, sending out fundraisers, declaring we're winning, and this sick play keeps replaying itself over and over across the country as this 20-week ban is the new strategy of the pro-life industry to raise money on the over the dead bodies of tens of thousands, millions even, of murdered innocent children. You're all disgusting, filthy, and vile. You should be ashamed of yourselves. On Judgment Day, there's going to be hell to pay for you people who told the people that we could regulate the murder of the innocents and that everything was going to be okay. All right. Speaking of that, Islam, according to the International Business Times, Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. It will overtake Christianity within the next 50 years. The reason primarily is the greater number of children Muslims have. There you have that. Meanwhile, the Pope from the Bad Religion File, are we almost out of time? We're almost out of time. I hate to do that. LifeSite News reports that Pope Francis has urged panelists at a Vatican-run workshop that they should advocate the fact that people should have fewer children in order to make the world more sustainable. That's the Pope. While Islam is set to overtake Christianity, and white girls in Iowa can't kill their babies fast enough, before 20 weeks. While all that's going on, the Pope says we should have fewer children. This isn't from the Pope's mouth. This is according to botanist and environmentalist Peter Raven, who sits on the panel. He's on the Holy See's panel, the Pontifical Academy of Sciences. And so he's a part of the Pope's official entourage there. Listen to what this communist liberal bastard says as he sits on a pontifical part of the Holy See. Listen to what he says. He says, we need to find ways for natural resources to be distributed on the basis of compassion and love. A note to the Pontifical Academy. There already exists a way, a means, a mechanism for the distribution of natural resources based on compassion and love. It's called the family. And you can find it in the Bible. It's all in there. It's all over inside your Bible, which is filled with people doing nothing but having children and providing for them based on compassion and love. Even wicked, evil people. They distribute their natural resources based on compassion and love when it comes to their family. But the Pope, the church, the pro-life industry, all of them, they've all lost track of the fact that God already told us how to do this. And we don't need a Pope or anyone else to start encouraging us to have fewer children to have a sustainable planet, you bunch of idiots. If you want to sustain the planet, what we need is more love. And where do you find true love? You find it in the family. Mostly from the children to the parents. Children are much more capable of true love. Innocent children, they're much more capable of true love. Anyway, that's all very depressing. Do I have anything to close with? I don't think so. The rest of this is just all very depressing. Oh, here you go. There's been a DNA analysis of poultry in several grilled chicken sandwiches at fast food outlets around the country. A&W Chicken. Oh, this is in the United Kingdom. A&W, 89% chicken. McDonald's, 84% chicken. Tim Hortons, 86% chicken. Wendy's, 88% chicken. Subway averaged under 50% chicken in their chicken sandwich. What does that mean in the big picture? Well, it really doesn't amount to much. But it's just something to close the show that's not utterly depressing. And so with that, we'll let you go. And I appreciate you tuning in this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. You can catch me this week, by the way, on the terrestrial radio on AM 670. AM 670, I said. Where I'll be sitting in on Wednesday this week on the Real Terrestrial Radio on Bob and Yart Live. I'll be there. So I thank my friends at KGov and at AM 670 and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.